Welcome to the Big Unlock Podcast, your leading source of info for insights and best practices in digital health and digital transformation. Join host Patty Padmanabhan, CEO of Damo Consulting and co-author of Healthcare Digital Transformation, How Technology, Consumerism, and Pandemic Are Accelerating the Future, in conversation with leading practitioners of healthcare and technology.
Hello again, and welcome back to this new episode of the Big Unlock Podcast. My name is Patty Padmanabhan. I am the CEO of Damo Consulting and the host of the podcast. This week, my special guest is Christian Myers, CIO of Mount Sinai Health System in New York City. We discuss a range of topics from telehealth to digital experiences, remote care, home health, and yes, the recently announced multi-year cloud transformation journey at Mount Sinai. Let's jump right in. And before we get started, I want to take a quick moment to acknowledge the generous sponsorship of our partners, BeWell. I am thrilled to be here with Christian Myers, CIO of Mount Sinai Hospitals in New York City. Christian, thank you so much for setting aside the time and welcome to the show.
Thank you and look forward to the discussion.
You're most welcome and I'm looking forward to it too. So just to get started, for the benefit of our listeners, do you want to tell us a little bit about Mount Sinai?
Sure. So the health system was created in 2013. And it was a merger of Mount Sinai Medical Center and Continuum Health Partners. And we have about 8 hospital campuses in New York and the Icahn School of Medicine. So Mount Sinai has had a very long history. We started out in 1820 with New York Eye and Ear, and over time have really, you know, accumulated a number of hospitals. But our main hospital was founded in 1852. We have around $9.3 billion in revenue, 43,000 employees, and over 7,000 physicians. So a very large academic health system in New York.
Yeah, and Mount Sinai is one of those iconic names in the healthcare ecosystem in our country and one of the leading names in the New York City market as well. So thank you for sharing that. So, Christian, there's a lot that I'd like to cover in this conversation over the next 30 minutes or so, but I want to dive straight into your digital strategy at Mount Sinai and your top priorities for enterprise digital transformation as a CIO of the organization.
Sure. So I know that, you know, everyone is aware the pace at which technology and digital is transforming healthcare. It's just accelerated exponentially, especially with COVID. And there are so many ways of doing business. We've got a shift to digital workforce, new digital channels in which we can engage our patients, and innovative ways to provide care. And so my goal has been to reinvent and transform technology and digital as an organization and drive, you know, a real change in culture so that it's innovative and resilient within the department. And so for me, there's 3 themes that I'm really focused on for our department. One is customer service and being able to, you know, serve and support and enable our stakeholders. A second is innovation. And I think that innovation has to be done at scale at the enterprise level. And there has to be a focus on differentiation and new ways of working and new business models, and then looking at new opportunities to drive change and transformation. And then the third is around digital. So thinking about our patient and employee experiences in an overall digital strategy and roadmap. And so as I look at digital, you know, the focus has to be around digitally enabling Mount Sinai as a preferred destination for our community. And we have to anticipate needs so that we can provide that equitable and seamless experience to everyone we interact with. So when I think about digital, you know, I go back to a framework and, you know, that it really has 3 components. One is digital business models. So how do we reimagine the way we do business with digital and technology capabilities? Second is digital experiences. So looking at, you know, the experiences that our patient and employees are having, and then the digital core. which is around our operating model. So people, process, and technology. We've really taken a step back and, you know, have been thinking about how do we take a more experience-led and integrated approach so that we've got a digital roadmap that prioritizes key opportunities we've identified, and then understand what the technology implications and changes that need to be made to support that, and then incorporating other considerations like program governance, change management, and then activating it as a whole in the organization.
I'd love to unpack some of that during the rest of the conversation. Mm-hmm. But let me start first with something you said in the latter half of your comments, which was around technology enablement for the digital experiences and the digital transformation. Mount Sinai recently made an announcement about a multi-year cloud transformation journey. Can you tell us a little bit about that? What is the scope and scale of it? What led you to do it? And how is that going to enable you to accomplish all of these goals that you just talked about?
So I've been looking at each functional area in the technology organization and started to look at, you know, data centers and, you know, our business continuity disaster recovery. And I think if we look at how do we transform that, look at our target operating model over the next 5 years, it means that we have to have a cloud transformation and we need to mature our capabilities around business continuity and disaster recovery, and then provide that modern and scalable platform in which, you know, we can grow with the health system. And so we did partner with Microsoft, which is our cloud provider, and Accenture, who will be our system integrator to really execute on that cloud and data center transformation. And the reason why we're doing this is to support innovation efforts. I think that it will enable new business and growth models to support research and AI efforts as an academic medical center. We'll have a more modern technology infrastructure with increased security. We can also improve our uptime, recovery, and we'll have increased agility. And we're also going to avoid significant costs to complete facilities remediation and, you know, hiring of additional data center and facility staff. Just to give you a sense, we have 13 data center and server rooms across the health system. So that's significant. And being able to reduce that to at least one on-prem, eventually it'd be great to have none, but one at least, will significantly, you know, reduce our costs also. And I think improve our ability to recover from outages that would impact revenue, our patient care and operations. And, you know, we get to have that geographic diversity and failover capabilities that are in the cloud. This was a large step forward, but I think necessary for us to do as an organization.
So I imagine a large part of your applications estate is going to move to the cloud as a consequence. And can you talk a little bit about that? Are you moving your EHR, for instance? Can you talk a little bit about what all that means?
Yeah, so we've gone through our application portfolio and, you know, reviewed which applications we think would be a light lift to move to the cloud versus a heavy lift. You know, there are some applications that, you know, today are not ready to move to the cloud. And so we'll have to work with those vendors over a period of the next few years. But as it relates to the EHR, our intent is to move Epic to the cloud. And so we'll start with training environment, testing environments, et cetera, disaster recovery, before we even move to some of our larger environments and ultimately production. But we're working very closely with Epic as well as Microsoft and Accenture to make sure that that transition will be successful over the coming years.
There's no question that this is going to be a complex multi-year process for you. And just based on everything that I know and I've seen in the marketplace, you would be one of the pioneers at the front end of this cloud migration wave, if you will, at least from the point of view of health systems and healthcare providers, although other sectors of the economy may have done a little bit more. And so What does that feel like? First of all, is that even a fair assessment that we are in very early stages of cloud migration as a sector, as providers, and you're right there at the front end of it? What does that feel like?
I think we see financial services and other sectors, as you mentioned, have already made this transition. And when I speak to other CIOs, everyone is looking at cloud, software as a service. And in fact, many applications that are already in the portfolio are software as a service. And so I think CIOs are taking a gradual approach. And I think it depends upon the amount of investments that have been made historically in data centers. Some CIOs have built their data centers from the ground up and invested significant amounts of money in doing that. For us, it was a very different picture when we started looking at our investments, how many data centers we had. And overall, the business case for us to move to the cloud really made sense. For other organizations, it may not make sense at this time. And so taking that gradual approach may make sense for their organization. So I do think it depends on, the amount of investment that has already taken place also in these areas.
Very good. I'd like to go back to some of your digital transformation themes that you talked about. And let's start with the digital customer experience, consumer experience, patient experience. One of the big shifts in the last couple of years has been the shift towards telehealth models, virtual real-time video consults that became the default mode during the early stages of the pandemic. And now, of course, some of the volumes are dropping off and people are coming back into the clinic. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience, the investments you've made, and what does your telehealth program, or let's just call it telehealth program, depending on how you want to define it, and where do you see yourself today with regards to your patient population adopting it and your own provider community?
Yeah, so I would say prior to COVID, we had developed the infrastructure. We had a number of physicians who were, I would say experimenting with telehealth, but it was not necessarily part of the model of care, across the health system. But the good news was that the infrastructure was in place. And so when COVID hit, over 2 years ago, we were able to scale very quickly. And, we saw very large volume with telehealth. Right now, as we see with the trends of other health systems, it's dropped. But it's been very, very steady, around 15 to 20% overall ambulatory volume, which is significant. And, I think that, there'll continue to be investment there. There's also, we've made a lot of investments around teleconsultations in the inpatient setting. And we've seen cost of care savings, and we can alleviate clinical capacity constraints really by diverting patients from higher acuity sites of care. And so that will continue to be an area that we invest in around teleconsultations. And for us, access is really the center of our digital roadmap and is a core priority. So making sure that we have virtual health as a key pillar that we continue to invest in will be important.
Let's take a quick break. And I'd like to acknowledge our partners and sponsors, Be Well. And if you like this podcast, rate us on whatever favorite podcast platform you're listening on. And if you're interested in listening to the archives, visit us at thebigunlock.com. With that, back to the conversation. So one of the things I hear a lot, especially now that we're settling towards what is being referred to as a hybrid model of care, where you're going to have a mixture of in-person visits complemented by virtual visits. Now, obviously, the quality of the experience becomes very important so that patients feel a seamlessness. Can you talk to us a little bit about one or two challenges that you've had to overcome and what your immediate priorities are as it relates to the next stage of evolution of this hybrid model of care?
I think making sure that the platforms that we're utilizing are platforms that integrate very well with the electronic health record, to your point, we have used a variety of tools that have integrated well with Epic. Currently looking at Zoom also as part of our overall unified communication strategy. And they have been integrated with Epic and may be a good vendor long-term for us to work with, considering that we're looking at them more broadly across the organization.
When you look at your tool and platform choices, there is a plethora of options out there from a digital health, from a consumer experience, virtual care, you know, access-related tools. Do you have a sort of an Epic first policy that you go with, or do you evaluate tools on a case-by-case basis? Can you talk to us a little bit about how you approach these platform choices to create this seamless experience?
I always think about the overall Epic roadmap because it is one of our foundational platforms, similar to ServiceNow, a Salesforce, an ERP. So I think that, you know, making sure you understand what the roadmap is and what functionality is coming in the next 2 to 3 years is extremely important. There are so many gaps, though, with any of these foundational tools that you always need to be looking at other solutions to complement them. My approach is looking at the solution in the context of experience, specifically for our patients and employees, is extremely important. And how does it integrate with some of the foundational products like an Epic is important to understand. And then being really intentional about what the roadmap looks like. Are we implementing a product or a point solution for 2 to 3 years before it becomes part of the roadmap of Epic? And then having just being intentional about decommissioning it. And we've done that with vendors before, and we're very upfront with them. And we'll say, you know, we're going to implement for 2 to 3 years for this particular function. But when Epic, you know, releases this function, you know, we'll decommission and implement that. So I think it's methodical, but it also, the Epic tools need to be able to have the functionality and, you know, of these point solutions. And I think that's some of the challenges over time.
I think that's a very, very valuable and interesting input for, especially for startup founders listening to this podcast, you know, because some of these solutions may be there intentionally just for the next 2 or 3 years, because you know that something's coming from Epic and you can't wait for Epic to roll it out. So you have, you need something now, but you know, the intent is always there. And so, of course, I'm sure, you know, startup founders are going to feel a little bit disappointed that they're not part of the long-term roadmap. But who knows, you know, maybe they'll find another iteration of their product. Let's talk a little bit about the remote care, home health part of digital transformation. A lot of care is now moving outside the hospital into the home, and that movement is picking up a lot of steam. Can you tell us a little bit about your own experience and some of the programs that you've got going on in those areas, remote monitoring, home health space?
So this is a space that our teams are working on specifically with Mount Sinai Health Partners in population health. And we currently have approximately 2,000 patients enrolled in remote patient monitoring, and specifically around areas like blood pressure. And I think that it's a priority for us. And, you know, we need to be able to expand these programs. And in the meantime, we're looking at who will be our foundational partner overall for remote patient monitoring. There are a number of vendors, as you're well aware, it's a crowded marketplace. And, you know, really looking to be able to have one vendor for many of the capabilities. I don't think we'll get to, you know, 100% of the capabilities with one vendor. But if we can get a vast majority with one vendor, I think that would be helpful. I'm interested to hear what your thoughts are about this space.
Well, I see that home health is definitely going to be the default mode of care in the next 5 to 10 years for large parts of your routine care needs, and maybe even for chronic care needs. And you come into the hospital, and you have to come into the hospital. And I think the big investments that are going into it by companies like Amazon are going to define the space in some way going forward, because they are approaching the market from a very, very different standpoint. And now the technologies that are emerging can make it a viable reality. So whether it is remote monitoring, where you can, use the sensors and monitors and devices to pull the data and intervene appropriately, or whether it is voice recognition technologies, all of that, I think, is going to enable the shift towards more of a home health model. That's kind of what I'm seeing.
And with the vendor marketplace, what are you seeing there? Because from our perspective, it just seems very crowded. And many of the vendors also do not want to integrate with the foundational system.
There's a lot of tension between a foundational, Epic in particular, I would say, and the vendor community out there at large. And the tension has to do with the source of the data, basically. How do you get the data to drive the experiences? In general, the comment I would make about the vendor landscape is that it is a thriving vendor landscape, but it's also very fragmented. It's very hard to see who's going to make it and who is not. And there's a number of things in play in that regard. Integration with Epic EHR or EHR and transaction systems being one of them. But then there's all this other stuff in the workflows. How do you really take care of people at home? How do you create a seamless model where they can come into the hospital, go back, do a televisit, be taken care of at home, have somebody call in or check in, send a nurse? There's all of these things that need to come together seamlessly. I think we're still some distance away from creating that seamlessness. I don't know if you agree, but that's kind of what
I do agree. I agree. It's very fragmented right now.
Yeah. I want to touch on a couple of other themes really quickly. We already started talking about it, data and analytics. Mount Sinai is the Hassel Plattner Center for a lot of research-related data and analytics program. Then, of course, I'm sure you mentioned population health. Tell us a little bit about your high-level approach to data and analytics and anything significant. We're seeing a lot of health systems getting into this space, setting up venture funds and so on. I just saw one announced by Northwell just the other day.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about your data and analytics program.
Yeah, so again, about 2 years ago, we took a step back and looked at all of our data assets across the health system. And as you can imagine, being a research organization, we have a number of them. But the end result was that, while we have a lot of data assets, we needed to, create an enterprise data hub. So we've been making a lot of investments there, looking at data governance and data stewardship, making sure that, when we're providing data to either our researchers or educators or to our faculty, that the quality of the data is there. So that's been one area of focus. Secondly, making sure that we have data that's accessible and can be sent to our payers. And there are significant incentives that we get, and any healthcare organization gets, being able to create that real-time data feeds to the payers. And so that's been an area of focus for us, as well as predictive modeling. And we've got an amazing clinical data science team that develop predictive models and integrate them with Epic. And, we're looking at ways in which potentially we could spin off some of the work that has been done, because it's pretty amazing. And, with a very large ROI and tremendous operational impacts, really improving quality and outcomes. So there's a lot of exciting stuff going on here, but I think that the predictive modeling is probably one area that stands out to me.
Yeah, you mentioned data quality, and I wanted to go back to the earlier commentary around remote health, remote monitoring, and so on. One of the things I do here is that there's such a fragmentation of the data sources, the devices, there's no standard data model. And then, so just getting the data isn't enough, but getting it in the, kind of standardized format and then being able to wrangle it all into a usable data set, that does seem to be a significant challenge. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I think it is a challenge, something that we're working through actually as part of our overall enterprise data hub strategy.
So let's talk about one more theme in the context today of what, you know, what we're experiencing is an acute labor shortage at all levels in all sectors of the economy. And so it seems like, from what I hear, automation technologies are stepping into the breach in some way. Can you talk to us a little bit about your thoughts on automation technologies and where you see them being applied in your context?
So I think that automating administrative tasks through robotic process automation, it can reduce human workload and realize cost savings. And I also think it can increase employee satisfaction and retention rates because it takes some of the very simple and basic work and automates that so employees can focus on the more complex work. And so we have an RPA team that, you know, works with the business and looks to identify and evaluate and executes on process automation opportunities. And, you know, we're also investing in, you know, some conversational AI with our access center to free up capacity there. And, you know, I think, yes. And also with the IVR experience. And I think where you can automate administrative tasks, I think it helps improve employee experience and prevents employee burnout. And I think that's a real problem that we're seeing across the board, whether it's the clinical teams, our physicians, our nurses, but everyone, quite frankly, in healthcare.
So, Kristen, you're the CIO of one of the largest health systems in the country. You've had a long career in technology and as a CIO. How has the role of the CIO changed, especially in the last few years? And what do you see as the big leadership qualities that today expected of CIOs and how that is different from what it might have been just a couple of years ago?
Oh, yeah, it's so different. If you asked, and I'm sure you did, ask people what the role of the CIO was pre-COVID, I think it's a very different response. And, you know, again, I think it goes back to how technology and digital innovation has just accelerated. And it's no longer about managing, you know, IT anymore. I think it's about, you know, leveraging technology and digital to enable business and drive growth and create business value. And being a partner at the executive leadership table and influencing and helping formulate and enable the business strategy of the health system and then being able to execute on those priorities to really achieve the business outcomes. So I think it's a huge change in mindset and how people view the IT function, which is why I renamed our organization to Digital and Technology Partners. I think that it represents our vision and value and culture and contributions to the health system. I think that it doesn't necessarily, if we say IT, it doesn't appeal to a new digital generation either. And we want to be able to try and retain and recruit technology talent. And this will continue to be an ongoing challenge as, you know, you're well aware and everyone's aware of the Great Resignation. So being able to attract talent is really important. So
yeah.
So very different role.
Yeah. And I love that, you know, I love that you talked about renaming the function as digital and technology partners. And again, reframing the role in that way can be so compelling in terms of the message that you communicate and the signals that you send to all the stakeholders around here, not least of whom are the talent, the young and upcoming talent. We're almost at the end of our time here. I do want to leave you with one last question. You know, there's a lot of folks listening to this podcast who are from the technology ecosystem, startup founders, and so on. What's your advice to them if they want to approach Mount Sinai to be a partner in your journey?
I think be clear on the value proposition and the business model. You know, we're a large mission-driven organization, and our margins, operating margins, are pretty tight. So we're always looking for sustainable business models with measurable impact. And some companies will say, we'll give you a free pilot before you scale. But, you know, nothing is free because it means that you're redirecting resources and team members, and it comes at a cost to the organization. So understand that even if that offer is made, it still requires a comprehensive review. And, you know, again, I would encourage startup organizations to think about the industry is moving away from point solutions. So if you're going to, you know, pitch that, you need to ensure that you're articulating, you know, how you're addressing capability and experience gaps and how that could integrate into our foundational products such as Epic, the ERP, et cetera. I think that healthcare organizations are going to start focusing more on the patient experience and the employee experience. And having so many digital health vendors that don't integrate with one another, it becomes a dissatisfier to our patients and employees.
Yeah. Is that why the industry is moving away from point solutions? Maybe that's a topic for a much deeper conversation, but just your quick thoughts on that. Is this lack of integration, the friction that you're alluding to, is that why the industry is moving away from point solutions?
I believe so, because we have frictionless experiences in our everyday life with other industries, right? And with healthcare, there's a lot of friction. And I think, you know, some of the friction is really down to the lack of a focus on that experience. And if you have so many vendors that aren't being interoperable and, you know, providing that seamless experience to your patients, it's very dissatisfying.
Well, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there for today. This has been a fascinating conversation, Christian. I hope to have you back on the podcast at some time and compare notes. But thank you so much for setting aside the time to share your thoughts. And once again, all the very best.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Once again, I'd like to thank our partners BeWell for their sponsorship and their support.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. We invite you to subscribe to our weekly newsletter, The Healthcare Digital Transformation Leader. Write to us at info@thebigunlock.com with your feedback and questions.